Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. A female faces of a Buddha. It's interesting to note that the Western teachings have many of the same mythologies and language structure rituals as you find in the Eastern traditions, but they're largely lost. A lot of them have been carried on by mystery traditions, and you see them surfacing in such things as tarot, and a Kabbalistic study, that kind of arising. But maybe you want to move up just a bit. I hate it when you're so far away. I start feeling lonely. Thank you. And I would like to, in order to talk about this, I would like to talk about it by starting with the Western system, the mystery system. And you see traces of the mystery system in Christianity, but to a large extent it's been obliterated, and it's very hard to find it, and very, very hard to receive teaching about it. So whenever I get the opportunity, I like to bring some life to it for you. And the life I'm going to give you is when Jesus says, I give you the keys to the kingdom, that ye can loose what shall be loosed and bind what shall be bound. So this is based on two energies, the loosening energy and the binding energy. Is that pretty straightforward? The keys to the kingdom, inner or outer, are loosening and binding. The loosening energy is like an undifferentiated plane. So it can be represented by just a horizontal line, horizon. An undifferentiated plane. If we lived in a two-dimensional universe, we'd all be rug level. So consider that for a moment. Assume yourself to be rug level. If you want to raise something out, name it, operate with it, work with it, you have to develop a third dimension. You have to tabulate, which is the word table. You have to raise it out of the general field of consciousness. Every table is a shrine. It's what you're focusing on, what you're working. Every table is the tool of the magician, the Magus card in tarot. Everything that your consciousness tabulates, pulls out of the totality, is you, the male energy, focusing on something and taking it out of the horizon. That power to focus, that male energy, cuts through the endless, non-differentiated quality of the female energy. Is that clear? And at just this point, just this glass, just this is what I'm tabulating, just this word, just this pen. It is now 18 minutes to 8. You know, that just this, just pick this out. out of a universe that is endlessly possible, naming something as real. What a magnificent talent. Lawrence Ferlinghetti has a poem. It goes, constantly risking absurdity and death. The poet. Isn't that lovely? Every time we name something in the face of totality, we're constantly risking absurdity and death. It is an amazing talent to just this in the vast potential of existence. So as it's going to do that, when it begins the naming, when it points and begins to tabulate, it's called the magician, the magus. And there are, in the card, there are four elements that the magus is working with: earth, water, fire, air. Naming, pointing. Then that enters this whole field, which at this side is the high priestess, the eternal virgin. She is a virgin because there is no way that she can be impure. There is nothing she is separate from. Two-dimensional totality. There is nothing she is separated from, therefore she cannot be made impure. If you contain everything, what is there that can be added that can cause impurity? And this is the real meaning of virgin. Not separate, total. So the magus comes in and splits the totality to name something. Immediately, she becomes the empress. She gives birth. She is beauty, she is Venus, giving birth to everything, anything. At which point, the magus energy becomes the emperor, the namer of that which is born. Adam's job was to name. That's what Yahweh did, you know, before Adam was made into the two, check to see whether they, Adam, Eve, Adam, had the power of naming. Brought all the animals in front of them and said, "What's this?" And Adam said,
"Zebra, platypus."
That's what we do. We are undifferentiated and naming. We are luminous and knowing. Is that clear? Is that pretty straightforward? Hello. Gee, you know, I just have to start all over again. So what I'm talking about is the basic qualities of maleness and femaleness in order to talk about the female faces of the Buddha. And I'm saying that there are according to Christianity, this teaching was also very strong in Christianity, but it got lost. According to Christianity, Jesus said, "I give you the keys to the kingdom, that ye shall loose what shall be loosed and bind what shall be bound." So there are two powers, loosening and binding. There is also the horizontal line, the two-dimensional plane where nothing is differentiated. And then there is the ability to just pull one thing out of that plane, tabulate it, create a third dimension, and interact with a specific thing, which then will dissolve again into the plane. You know that. The things you have focused on through the day, when you tabulated them, they've dissolved back into totality, haven't they? That's how your consciousness works. It's a very beautiful dance. Okay? So you have the magus, when there is the naming, these elements mixed just this way, that thing. The emperor, when the energy is being directed into the elements. The emperor, when there is a naming of that, this is like mantra, speech, body initiation. There is the high priestess before differentiation, who becomes the empress giving birth after differentiation. Okay? Those are the principles. Then there's this point right here, which is called the point of beauty. That's where there is everything and nothing. So these energies are both considered to be fiery. They're both very radiant, very fiery. Because they are the ongoing, non-stoppable, continuous dance of cause and effect. They are active. They are desire without object. Okay? Now, if it starts spinning counterclockwise is dissolution, clockwise is creation. Loosening, binding. Christian terminology. So you got this fiery cross here. And if you start spinning it this way, what happens to the flame? Pardon? No, it never goes out. It never goes out. It cannot. It bends this way. Looking familiar. If you spin it the other way, what does it become? What happens to the flame? Bends the other way. So you got the flame going this way. So this, I've got it spinning. I'm sorry, I was doing it the opposite to what you said, wasn't I? I can't tell you why I did that. So this one, because the flame is going this way, is spinning this way. That is to say, it's what? Creative or dissolving? Creative. And this one, because the flame is going that way, is what? Creative or dissolving? Dissolving. Which one did Hitler use? Dissolving. Why? Because he was dissolving the world order. To create a new order. If you look at Buddha Rupas, you will see swastikas on their forehead, on their hands, on their feet. Vajrayogini has a swastika, right? If you combine them, you have to draw them like this. The creative one is always the tilted one. To show it's moving. And you got this one going this way and that one going that way and this one going. What you get is what? The eight-spoked wheel of Buddhism. The middle way. The total integration of the energies. Isn't that beautiful? Where did the symbols come from? They come from your body. If you are meditating, sometime you feel energy moving inside your body. Anyone in this room ever feel that? Sometimes if you really pay attention, it's moving in a circular way. Sometimes it's clockwise. People who are body witness meditators will be more aware of that or not. That means the body bears witness to where the mind is moving. Not all people are body witness meditators. The piti, you've heard that word piti? This is called piti, these the winds in the Tibetan, the keys to the kingdom, to create and dissolve. If you're meditating and you have a lot of emotion releasing and you feel the energy turning, it would be turning counterclockwise. It would be dissolving past binding of energy. Then it will start turning clockwise. It will be creating the new cycle of energy. This is very bodily truth. These symbols come from a human being. They're not something out there. This is a portrait of you. This is what you look like now. I've never done a better portrait of anyone. Is this interesting to you? It's really interesting to me. And it is this point that is called the point of beauty. That is the point where there is neither creation nor dissolution, nor non-creation, nor non-dissolution, where the two energies are at total balance. That is called, in Buddhism, void nature. When the Empress, see, there are different levels of shunya, you know that. There's four types of shunya. You know that stuff? Do you know this stuff? Where's your basic Buddhist teacher?
Where?
Oh, no. You just have to learn your ABCs. Oh, that's another class. ABCs are another class. Well, maybe sometime I'll come down and we'll do a whole bunch of stuff on symbolism and what it really is in terms of your being and your body and how the symbol is actually the working of the radiant energy to come into harmony with the radiant energy. Does that sound good? We can maybe do that. It sounds good to me too, so who knows, when I learn to freeze dry my mother, I'll be there. Yes?
When you're feeling the movement within you, is it as if you think of clocks, is it like
it moves from left to right, or it moves from right to left? You don't have to think about clocks, you can just think about where's your right arm. Unless you're left-handed, I don't know, sometimes some people might experience it differently, but you'll know. Also, if you have those kinds of turnings, don't change your focus. Keep your focus on your meditation practice. Do not change your focus. You want to know why? In the Tibetan tradition, they say where the mind goes, the winds gather. So the winds are already doing. The meditation itself is creating the possibility for the radiant energy to reestablish its natural pattern, which is just fine. The winds are already moving. You put your mind there too, you make the traffic jam. Other winds start to gather there. That's why I'm so big on the feet. Why, whenever there's emotion, I always direct people to the feet. To keep the whole body involved, not to focus in. You know, don't focus on a pain unless you're doing insight and you want to explore it and watch when it dissolves and then go somewhere else. But whenever you're doing a practice, you don't fixate on the problem. You practice with a mind of equanimity, not preferring one thing to another. Yes? There are different types of meditators. There's meditators who are called faith types, and they're basically beings who just fall quite naturally into the path of Guru Yoga. Their main path is through devotion. And that's the way that transcendence in large and small amounts arise in their practice. There are beings who are called dry vision, and they this is a Theravadan way of teaching. I've never heard this expounded in the Vajrayana schools, although it may be, I just haven't heard it. Dry vision are beings who basically work with insight, this sort of mind-only school. They just perceive directly the non-self nature of reality, or like that, and just have a perception, and then the mind leaps to understanding. There's the body witness type, who basically, whatever it is, their mind is becoming aware of, they also experience in the body. So you know about them in Christianity, like St. Francis with his stigmata. You know the stigmata he had in his hands? His hands were bleeding like Christ and stuff. Well, there's also what you would call a chakra there, you know, and it can ooze and stuff. And you know, levitation, all those really things that just disturb the rest of the people in the room, you know, shaking, vomiting, diarrhea. They're called bliss in meditation. That's Buddhist bliss. Yeah, so I'm sure you want to sign up right away. Feeling, like, and it's differentiated, a feeling as if fleas were crawling on your body, a feeling as if lice were crawling on your body. And again, you know, Buddhism, I mean, the way they differentiate, it's just so wonderful, you know. You just see some monk there going, is that flea or lice? Let me see. Definitely lice. It's wild and wonderful. Diarrhea, nausea, cold, heat, hair raising on the body. These are all the shaking, the turnings. These are all called piti. In the Tibetan tradition, piti, you know that horse with the jewel on his back? That's the symbol for piti in Tibetan. It's called rapture or bliss. When the energy body is moving like a horse running freely in the meadow, like Hayagriva with the horse yelling from his head, then that is the full health energy of piti. And that's how the energy works to keep your actual physical body in good health, is through piti, basically. A lot of the modern ways of healing that use energy and cranial sacral and stuff, they're basically working with the piti, the body of piti, basically. Acupuncture, all that stuff. And the when someone like a Buddha is exhibiting piti, that's when he performs the dual miracle, which is called fire and water, moving weakly from the body, which, you know, you can believe or not. I believe it. I've seen enough things to make me believe it. I just described it. What do you mean? Well, you won't get there this lifetime, so it's like just a lot of blah to you. Don't ask me that, because I'll be nasty. Don't ask me that. Okay? Is this a deal? Thanks. I'll just ask you if you're taking notes or something, you know? I mean, whereas the actual turning in your body, which is something you are interested in because you've had the experience, then I'm really happy to talk to you about that. But, you know, one of the things about PT types is they tend to get into mysticism. They have body witness types, basically, are mystics. You know? So they tend to go into ecstasies already, so I don't want to add too much to your... I'll treat you like I treat myself. How's that? Someone else had a question here. Yes? Yeah, that's piti. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or when your eye suddenly twitches, or yeah. But some people, it's very marked when they're meditating. And then the fourth kind of meditator is called a twice liberated. That means they work through insight or dry vision and jhana or bliss. They work the two together. That's most people probably. Okay? Yeah? If you, you know, please ask questions. I'll try not to be nasty. Yes. The tarot. I said before you came in, I was talking about that in order to talk about the female Buddhas. I wanted to approach it from the Western way of describing the same thing, because I think it's easier for Westerners to grasp. So I was saying that in the West there is a long mystical tradition of these teachings, but they're very difficult to find. And you can see glimmers of it in Christianity, for example, when Christ said, "I give you the keys to the kingdom, that ye shall loose what shall be loosed and bind what should be bound." You know, the two ways of moving, right? And again, you see a little more defined sense of that teaching in the tarot deck, where at first there is the horizontal, the two-dimensional plane. Can you imagine yourself level to the rug? This is pretty well what I said. Imagine yourself just level to the rug with no way to be three-dimensional, right? What can you see? There isn't seeing it, really. There might be different sense of perception. Maybe like this is united to this, is united to this, is united to this, right? But there's a horizontal wisdom. Does that make sense to you? Can you imagine a two-dimensional view of the universe? Can you imagine yourself just on the level of the rug here? Sit down on the ground for a moment. Okay, now go just a little lower. Now, can you see me? Why? Pardon me? What? There isn't anything in the road. There's just two dimensions. We're on the same dimension. Right? But you have a sense that you're looking at something and there's some kind of connection. The person in front of you is looking the same way, right? And there's an awareness of what's on either side of you. And maybe through that awareness of what's on either side of you, you might get an awareness of what's on either side of them, right? There can be an extension, but not a view. Does that make sense? That doesn't make sense. You can't see. She's going up again. Oh, God. And now you've got a view. I see you. It's a third dimension, you see. Well, that's because I haven't gotten there yet. Let go. So that two-dimensional way of understanding is represented by a horizontal line. Does that make sense to you? Because nothing is third dimensional. It's just a horizon. That is basically the loosening energy. Nothing is picked out. Everything is woven into everything else, right? What's your problem? Well, I'm not there yet. You haven't got enough pieces to put it together. I just want you to just hear what I'm saying. I don't want you to get the right answer before I've had the great pleasure of telling you what it is. Okay, so I'm just describing the horizontal. And you got a sense of that from when you were sitting down? And right, and I was scrunching down so that we were on one plane. Right? But in order to have a view, to name something, is a different way of sensing. When you can actually see me talking, you don't find you're not so aware of everything that's around you, do you? Hmm? You're not sure? You don't know?
Yeah.
What?
What are you saying? Yeah.
So it's a different kind of of power, the power to be conscious in a horizontal way. You could even call it peripheral vision. And the power to just go to the point, which is this, just this point. It's like lightning striking water. Understand? In the tarot, these four qualities are represented by the first four cards, not counting the Fool card. So the Magus is that quality of light that is looking at where it's going to go to interact with the elements. The High Priestess is that quality of the horizontal before penetration and separation. The Empress is that quality of the High Priestess when she is giving birth from that interaction. And the Emperor is the namer of what is born. So these are the two poles of the male energy, and these are the two poles of the female energy. And that's what I was talking about before you came in. Okay? If anybody else comes in,
I'm not going to go over that again.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? I think that's a beautiful thing for you to explore. I think it would be worth exploring that. Worth exploring what part of your senses are horizontal and what part are vertical. What part are loosening and what part are binding. I give you the keys to the kingdom. That was really true. That was really true. That remains true. These are the keys to the kingdom. These are the ways we create and dissolve reality continuously, either consciously or unconsciously, with emotional patterns, with physical patterns, with mental patterns, continuously. Okay? This is the whole field of cause and effect as well, how it dances, how things come into fruition and dissolve, and then come into fruition and dissolve. This is just a little summary for you to play around with. I'm trying to keep it simple so that you can stay with the basic principles. Basic principles are loosening and binding. So then, in order to understand how the female faces of awakening arise, the female face of awakening has to be a total middle way with these two energies in total integration, but from the horizontal point of view. Is that clear? It's kind of complicated, but I hope that's clear to you.
Can you say it again?
I will. The female face of Buddha Dharma, of Buddhism, of the Buddha, has to be at this middle point where there is total integration of the two energies. But from a female point of view. So it's more into the Empress energy, into what is coming into birth, more into what is coming into birth when you're talking about the female Buddha. Because what you're talking about, for example, with Green Tara, is the Buddha activity of the horizontal being of totality. So the activity of totality. Why is it the activity? Because it's green. Green is the color that is there for activity. It represents air, the element air. So with 21 Tara, for example, okay, no, before we get there, the activity of the Buddha, whether male or female, but particularly female, there are four activities. In the Theravadin tradition, they're called loving-kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. In the Vajrayana tradition, they're called peace, prosperity, seduction, and wrath. Is that clear? And we're going to be doing more work with those tomorrow. That's where I'm going to take it more. So, with the 21 Tara, you have arising in space in the center, the activity, Green Tara, the activity of the loosening energy that is totally interwoven, totally balanced with the binding energy, but more looking from the loosening energy quality, right? Female. 21 Tara, there she is. She's sitting there in the center, arising in space. And this is like space element, right? And she has 21 ways of acting. Which, when she performs an activity, it is horizontal, that is to say, it occurs simultaneously at all places in all times. It's very beautiful teaching. So the first activity that she performs is peace. The second activity that she performs is prosperity. I should call it one P-E and P-R. And the third activity that she performs is seduction. And the fourth activity that she performs is wrath. Okay? And how does she perform these? She performs them through the medium of the first is water, earth, fire, air, water, earth, fire, air, water, earth, fire, air, water, earth, fire, air. So peace operating with water, with earth, with fire, with air. Prosperity operating with water, with earth, with fire, with air. Seduction operating with water. Peace is linked to the element of water. Prosperity is linked to the element of earth. Seduction is linked to the element of fire, and wrath is linked to the element of air. Okay. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. The 21 activities. Is that good? Well, because the fool is a non-entity, wandering blindly, falling over cliffs, always manifesting as something he didn't expect. I don't know whether it is. I would not go that far and say so. I have never tried to correlate them. But it's tempting, isn't it?
Well, they're definitely elements.
Yeah, I know.
And anyway.
I know. But it's tempting, so let me know.
Some rock is going on, not so busy.
Yeah, exactly.
I may not figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really fascinating field, and it's very easy to want something to correlate. And so, you know, just kind of, I'm sure this will fit the way I do jigsaw puzzles. This piece does go here, you know. It's not necessarily true. You see that, is it? So, okay. So, what is peace? A good example of peace always looks for what else can be joined. What else can be joined? What else is possible? What else can we add? What else can we bring into it? Doesn't get locked in that one versus one. How about if we approach it this way, which is water, cohesiveness. How to make things move together, even if they're operating. One is an iceberg, one is steam. Does that make sense to you? The activity of peace is cohesive. So Waitara is probably, in the Buddhist tradition, the most profound example of the female face of Buddha as the activity of peace. Prosperity is building on this, which can then be built on to extend into this extension. You know, water makes a bead, doesn't it? It cohesives in globes, makes a bead. Earth, you build on and then build on and build on. Water always flows to its lowest level. Earth extends into space. Water fills space. Earth extends into space. So the whole quality of extending, finding more ways to do, but then, again, let's try it this way. Moving one thing, but getting seeds from it and moving it further and becoming more creative with it. It's a kind of a richness. Fire. The seductive energy. Well, I mean, the seductive energy. Dorje Palmo, Vajrayogini. She has this pig's head. What does it say? Oinking furiously. Oinking furiously. She has 51 freshly severed heads as a necklace. In Buddhism, there are 52 chaitasikas, they're called. They're like furniture in the mind. Like you put them together and you get moods. There are 52 of them. She has cut off 51 of them. But the 52nd, the instinctual power of the continuum consciousness, the desire... She is a red-hot tomato. She is dancing passionately. She holds... She's wearing bone ornaments, every one of the 6 bone ornaments, except the one that says she has renounced life. She does not have the ash from the cemetery. Because we ain't into renunciation, baby. But does she cling? No. In her right hand, she has what? She has one of these. She has. I wear this to remind myself to cut off clinging. She has. This is what they use for in the same tool in the Inuit, in the Eskimo. Same exactly, same knife. This is for skinning and cutting up flesh, you know. To cut off clinging, cut off the past. And in her left hand, she has what? A skull cup. Isn't she just so seductive? Yeah. Full of 5 kinds of blood mixed together. And this is like the living energy of the moment. And she drinks the moment, passionately cuts off the past, and then she's ready. The cup refills. She is a red-hot tomato. She is red, ruby red in color. She is seductive. She is the passion of the moment. She is the passion of letting yourself be alive, cutting off the past, and being here passionately. Passionately open, abandoned. Her name Sanskrit is Vajra Yogini. In Tibetan, they call her Vajra, and Dorje are the same word. Dorje is Tibetan, Vajra is Sanskrit. Dorje Palmo, P-A-L-M-O in Tibetan. Seduction. See, what's so potent about it is without object, without trying to package it into something that you're going to get, you know, not feeding me, just totally, the desire totally to be here. A little bit like Mother Teresa seeing Christ everywhere, you know, a passion for it. Passion for that. So the problem with her, of course, is that you could die into that. The joy of that is you could die into that. Mm. risk it all. Just risk it all. And in Child's book, it would be the little engine, you know? I think I can, I think I can. I know I can, I can, I know I can. Then there's Ra.
So who is there, the female face of the Buddha?
Cutting off ignorance. Cutting off greed, hatred, and delusion. Cutting off separateness. Stamping on Mara. This has come to the end of its time. And in fact, Ra is considered to be the pinnacle of wisdom because all things return to the horizontal. And the horizontal is filled with the lights of the billions and billions of lightning poles that are struck. And so whatever comes birthed from those two remembers both. How's that? Yeah, there are for both of these, and you know, at the moment I cannot think of a way to describe them. I think my brain must be somewhere in the middle of the equator or something. It must have gone on a holiday, so you know, please forgive me, I don't know. But if you look, you'll find them. I suppose you could say what's her name? The Paulden Lamo, the great protectress. You saw Kundun, the movie? Mm-hmm. You know, the female protectress of Lhasa, when the young boy who is plays the Dalai Lama says, "Who is that? That fierce deity?" And he says, "That's Paulden Lamo. She is the protector of Lhasa and of Tibet." And he, "Is she real?" And he said, "Yes. Yeah, she's real. You betcha." She's real. They're all real. It's all real. It's all dancing in you somewhere. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yeah.
What I get, my gut feeling about this at the moment is that seems a very naming sort of way to talk about something unnameable.
That's what I'm doing, naming it. But the practice, where you say the praise verse for each one of those, and you visualize them, and you're calling that energy to come into your being. If you do the practice, it is not naming. Yes, that's what my job is, to sit here and name some things so that you know it's possible. That's true.
But this system, that particular one.
Which particular one?
The system that, not the Western system, not the Western.
This, the 21 Tara? Mm-hmm.
My gut reaction is that was written down and described by males.
Yeah? Mm. That's interesting.
I mean, is that historically, isn't that true?
I don't know. That's not the only history I have heard of it. I've heard so many different histories. You know, there is that history, and there is also a history that is not true. And there is also a history that males did it to revere the female. And there are many histories.
My gut feeling, whenever I hear this thing, I just
this thing?
I blow it apart because it seems
to... I hear you. I hear you.
It seems to want to be just blown apart, blown away.
Yeah. Why? 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 Why is there so much anger?
I don't know. I don't know, but it's definitely...
Yeah.
I just feel like... It wants to give form to something to me that shouldn't be having form.
If that was what it was going to do, I would agree with you. I would not sit here and teach. But if what it does is invoke in you the idea that this might be something that would be interesting to explore, and that these are actually street signs or road signs pointing you into the wilderness, where you can come to these deities and have your own initiation, which is what they are. They are not in any way meant to be an experience. They are road signs. It's like a sign on the road saying Hobart, so far, you know. And you do not, some people might, I suppose, mistake the sign for Hobart.
Yeah, it's like the
road sign. Some people might very well say, oh, there's a sign that says Hobart, this must be Hobart. I don't know what the number means. No, and no way is it meant to be. And I am very pleased to tell you that all I am doing is naming that this is a practice that will direct you to these lands. And if you would like to go to these lands, this is a worthy way to explore it. This is a map. If you go, you will have the experience, not just look at the map. If you want to look at the map, you can. You know? You can, and many people do, you're right. And many people pretend they understand because they look at maps, you're right. And many people then categorize and, you know, plot down. But the Dakini is not controlled by those words. There is no way that that power. It's not possible. It is, isn't it? It is absolutely so.
The whole experience of doing those sort of practices is on the horizontal. I don't know what you think about that. Well, when you do those practices,
you don't have a clue.
Well, you
in a certain way.
It's all on the horizontal, not sort of above.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to evoke this.
Yeah, it's all happening on the same level. That's how my experience is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what?
Somehow the differentiation that starts to get, you know, starts to feel really...
I understand you. I hear you. And it's very foolish to sit here and talk about the female faces.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that.
No, I am. I'm saying, you know, I look at myself doing some of this stuff, and I say, oh, isn't that wonderful? How sweet, dear. You're going for your PhD, you know?
Yeah.
Because the real truth is, you don't talk about it.
Yeah, and both of those.
But if my talking about it just dances around enough, makes people desirous enough, angry enough, I'm not adverse to using anger, wrath. Seduction offers them, you know, something that they really want, you know. I'll leave town and they'll be left with the desire.
Yeah, I don't think I was talking about you at all. As far as I can tell, it's...
The system.
It's a system. I mean,
it's a tabulation. It's a tabulation. It's a tabulation, and at the end of the day, all the tables dissolve anyway.
I tend to want to jump ahead to the blowing out of the water part.
So that's why I'm saying to you, what is it? What is it? What is the pain? What is the pain? What is the pain that, you know, there is? because that's so strong. You know? So it's worth exploring that. Have add some real kindness to that part in yourself. Thank you.
Cicely.
Yes, sir.
I've practiced Vajrayogini sadhana for many years, and I think it might be interesting and useful to say that all of those faces, and yet all the faces of all the Buddhas, both male and female, are yet a psychographic metaphor of human consciousness, both male and female, so-called.
Mm-hmm.
Could you agree with that?
Oh, I do agree with that.
And not necessarily to have been the relief. It's not, as you were saying, that no one can take control of those energies and misuse them in actuality.
In actuality, one can misuse oneself. One can misuse oneself with that illusion.
Yeah. But I mean, those powers won't be misused. I mean, the wrath, as you described, the wrath isn't what people might think is wrath. It's a useful sort of.
The wrath.
It's a compassionate expression.
The wrath is the truth that everything dissolves into totality at the end of the day.
But I mean, wrath from this perspective is not used except to enlighten and awaken people from it.
If someone is clinging very much to maintaining separateness, to maintaining delusion, as if there were no other truth, then it would be experienced as very, definitely, as very black and frightening wrath. So it depends on the eyes of the person looking.
That's what I was suggesting. Mm-hmm. Images,
yeah.
The glyphs.
Yeah.
They weren't put together for that purpose, to be misused.
They're not even put together. They're just our naming.
But I was just trying to say to everybody, because I know a lot of people, they don't know about this.
Yeah.
About what a dakini or a female is.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it's a picture of a group of symbols that suggest a level or a type or one of the aspects of human consciousness. And I say human, meaning both male and female.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that? You don't have to, but I'm just saying. I hope I'm not confusing the issue.
No, I mean that's a very fine way to look at it. You could also say that they are real.
Well, they can be made real.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's where you and I differ. I probably think that the universe is more mysterious than you do.
Are you a mystic?
Oh, I'm a body witness meditator, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a mystic, but I just thought that might
yeah, and I appreciate
the,
I appreciate
the gender bender out of it and
yeah,
set it up.
I appreciate it totally, and that, you know, consciousness has two aspects, luminosity and knowing, and it does have both. And when someone is born female, they tend more to operate from the luminosity side. And when someone is born male, they tend to operate more from the knowing side. But all beings have both. So I think the universe is more mysterious than you do. Dear. I know that. Dear. Yes.
Did you? Tara.
Tara has many meanings, but I think for me the favorite meaning is bolt. T- Tara is the energy that will carry you across the ocean that is not separate from the nature of the ocean. Tara is that which takes us to safe ground. Tara is the liberator, the savioress. Tara has four aspects. Praise Tara, swift and courageous liberator. That is to say, she liberates us from habitual patterns. With Tutare, you remove all fears. That is to say, she liberates us from fear. With Ture, you bestow all benefits. That is to say, she liberates us from poverty. I bow at your feet with Soha. That is to say, she is such a perfect refuge that it's easy to surrender. And that's what Tara means. Om Tare, Tutare, Ture, Soha. That's what she means. It doesn't. It doesn't relate to them, nor does it not relate to them. It doesn't relate. It is not relational. Relate means relatively, which is the knowing aspect. Me and you. I see you in relation to me, you. In relation to me, glass. In relation to me, pen. In relation to you, white sweater, that, but luminosity does not relate. It is not relational. Yeah, you could say that. You could say, if you were going to talk, although you cannot talk about absolute reality, without also having the inclusive nature of relative truth. Luminosity is wisdom. Knowing is compassion. Knowing is where to put the Band-Aid. Luminosity is there is no difference. Then that's knowing.
Well, then, and you're talking about luminosity.
That there is only awakening. All beings are moving to awakening.
That's what you call the Buddhist path.
Well, greed, hatred, and delusion are what you could call the Buddhist path too. Aren't they? Isn't that very Buddhist language? I would think so.
I was just wondering how marrying up the defilements as opposed to the luminosity.
There is no way to marry them. There is no separation. From the point of view of luminosity, there are no defilements, nor are there any non-defilements. It's no different. It's a two-dimensional plane. It's the mind that is trying to differentiate that's going to trip you up on this. You don't, you already are in it. It is teaching the knowing to mind the gap that is important. In between the moments of knowing is luminosity. How to maintain knowing when the gap arises without object. Awareness without object, it's often called. Or clarity without contrivance. I like that one the best. That's my favorite. That's so beautiful. Clarity without contrivance. I haven't mastered the trick yet, but sounds good to me. Nice questions. You're here.
I am.
Snuck in.
No, I am.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? You know, this is actually quite a lot. I'm pumping in there. I don't want to just go verbalizing all over it. I really would rather give you a few things and you ask your questions and then we leave it at that. Because this is something I'd like you to watch the consciousness move between knowing and being. When you go to sleep, where are you? Did you know there's an age? What is it, about 5 or 6 where, you know, maybe 4, maybe around, I think it's probably around 4. Where a child is waiting for their parent to come in and say goodnight to them, and the parent comes after the child's asleep, and so the child says, "You didn't come and say goodnight to me," and they say, "Yes, I did, dear. I came when you were sleeping," and the kid is terrified because they can't remember. And where were they when that happened? And they get a lot of monsters usually in their room around that age because they don't know what happens when I sleep. Terrifying. And then they get over that. Everybody goes, "Oh, ha, 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 isn't that cute?" Well, in a way, it's cute. It's actually terror. That's what it is. It's terror. And I guess, you know, terror can be sort of cute. But it always feels terrible to me.
So what can you do for the little child that's going through that?
What do you mean, what can you do? Tell them that they were looking in their dreams. And you would just like you look at them outside when they're playing, you look at them through the window. But they are still somewhere. They're playing in their dreams. And you were looking through the window and sleeping. You can tell them whatever you want. It doesn't matter. You're never going to be the perfect parent. Did you know this? I have friends. I have a few friends, actually. Nasty though I am, I actually have friends. And my friends often are parents, you know, which happens. People do reproduce. And they try to be perfect, you know, because they really love their children. And I always say to them, like, you know, give your kid a break. I mean, if you don't give them a couple of good neuroses, why would they leave home? Why would they be driven to awaken, to establish some kind of brilliance? What do you want to tell your kids? Are they going to be perfect little specimens? I don't think so. Whoever they are, if they are your children, it was a three-way agreement. The three of you agreed to get into this together. So all three of you deserve it. I mean, that's one way of looking. Close, eh? Yes.
I've got a question that seems like quite a pity question, but I'll just have to say it because it came up on Buddha's talk. Why is the Buddha always depicted as male?
Always, isn't always, but yeah, it's a good question. But in fact, the Buddha wasn't depicted at all for a long time. Then he was depicted with a footprint. That was the earliest images. And by the time he was depicted, there were two qualities going on. One was Greek influence, and the other was the culture and the male dominance of women as possessions. So, yeah, it was very difficult and remains very difficult for there to be. I mean, it is true that men have more power and are more aggressive than women, statistically speaking. How's that? Is that okay? It's true. And that women basically don't have quite as much freedom to choose what they do about pregnancy or not, and because their sex drive is not quite the same as a male sex drive, basically. Have you noticed that? It's true. I hate to break this to you if this is news. And so that when women were off in the woods meditating and so forth, you know, they were prone to getting raped and pillaged, big time. It used to happen a lot, even in the time of the Buddha. So it became too difficult. For example, do you understand what I mean by difficult? We're not talking right, we're talking about physical. For example, when Buddhism, the second age of Buddhism in Tibet, when they were trying to re-establish the ordination because it had been stamped out by this king who ruled for 6 or 8 years or something, what was his name? He ruled for 6 very busy years trying to obliterate all traces of Buddhism in Tibet, and then he was assassinated, and then they had to reestablish all the monasteries and everything. I can't remember his name anyway. It's probably a good sign. Anyway, they had to send people over the mountains to be ordained in Tibet, right? In India. And it was a very arduous trip, so women didn't go the first couple of times. And then that just was it. I mean, you could fly out now, do it, but there aren't that many Tibetans in Tibet anymore. But, I mean, there are, in the Chinese, Kuan Yin is a female figure for compassion. And there are female Buddhas, but not in the Theravadan tradition. In the Theravadan tradition, it's pretty entrenched in a lot of Buddhism, but the Vajrayana, but there are great movements going on, largely with the spread of Buddhism to the West, that there is a real, you know, there are not generations of women being possessions. Women actually think that they're people in the West. So I guess they have to be humored or something. I'm not sure what it is.
And what about the Dalai Lama? The Dalai Lama is essentially
a Buddhist. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if I was going to... There have been some female incarnations. Machik Labdron is a reasonable example. Yeshe Shogyal is a reasonable example. And Sautrey Malione's book, Women of Wisdom, is very worth reading. Just on this point. Have you read it?
No.
I really recommend it. She is, first of all, she is a wonderful teacher herself. And that book is written quite a while ago, but I think just the introduction is worth reading it. But the stories of the women are wonderful. But Magic Labdron, for sure. You know, there is a historical figure of Tara who refused to be reborn as a male because it was obvious that was one of the biggest delusions that humans need to overcome. So just she just said, no, I think I'll just keep coming back as a female until you get it.
Hmm? It is the mother of all the Buddhas.
Tara, yeah.
Samantabhadra? Yeah, Samantabhadra.
Bani? Oh, you're talking about the female aspects. Yeah, we're going to talk about that tomorrow.
No, I was just saying that talked about the mother of all the Buddhas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, isn't that convenient? That's what we always, that's the role we always get. Either you die when the Buddha is a week old, or you're a virgin when you give birth. I mean, there's always something, isn't there? There's always some little rider somewhere in that employment, in that questionnaire that you fill out for the job. You know, P.S. Are you a virgin in our sense of the word? He can't be awakened, and even then, you know, even if you manage to be a virgin and give birth, even then you're not quite allowed to be quite as good as, you know, your husband and son. I mean, you can't quite sit at the same table. Some ghost gets to be there, but, oh, Cecil. Uh-oh. I mean, I knew I was going to be nasty tonight, but I thought I was going to be sort of nice. Is the tape on? Well, is there another question? Yes. Yes. Yeah, the mother light and the sunlight. Yeah, exactly. Sunlight merges into the mother light and they become one. And that's the wheel. The energy is unencumbered because there is no conflict. It is just so clear. Here. And all the energies withdraw and there is no conflict. The experience of transcendence and the experience of death are the same experience. And there is no conflict. There are the four activities. That's right. How's that? Will you allow me to beg off if you don't have any more questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Because I feel like that's probably, I shouldn't say a lot more. I think you've got the keys to the kingdom. The fiery crosses. I could tell you that that's what a Dorje is too, right? And the bell. See, there are the four and the center point. But it's in three dimensions. Great mystery. The other thing about the Dorje, do you have Dorjes, any of you? If you look at these little side things, it's actually a sea monster that's swallowing a shell, choking on a shell. It's that desire being stopped by the sound of Dharma, stopped from eating blindly, and being transformed into the radiant energy that moves all things to enlightenment. It's an experience too. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? See, I don't think that you had anywhere on this planet one whole time where there was a matriarchy everywhere, and one whole time that all of a sudden this ice age came over and then it went back and then there was a patriarchy. I think that it was a continuous mixture all the time. So the plan that you're presenting me with, I have a little problem with. I'm sure in Tibet, as in most places, there were areas that were more matriarchal and areas that were more patriarchal. The Bon religion was very powerful, and there are Bon teachers who claim that it is the Buddhist teaching remaining from the time of the Buddha, Shakyamuni. Which is interesting because it's so shamanistic. And Indian Buddhism tended to get more and more scholarly. If you want, you can make, say, shamanistic traditions are matriarchal. They're more to do with the energy, the interconnectedness. And scholarly religions are more patriarchal, they're more to do with the ritual, the right way, the naming. You could say that. But if you name well, the energy should come. And if you perform the energy properly, you want to pass that knowledge on to someone else. So that's naming. I have trouble making those kinds of lines, is really what I'm saying. So if you can ask your question more clearly, that will clear up my confusion.
I guess I was just more interested in your view. I mean, I'm just a gathering of information that I don't really have any clear view either. I'm basically just trying to fit into other things I've heard about.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really, it's all history. I mean, it's only other people's view of what happened.
Indeed, and what about all the people who died to make something possible? Where are their names written? You know, that's what I always wonder. Yeah. Where's the ordinary pea soup maker? The plumber. Yeah. Well, that's what the king was doing, eh? Oh, that's what the general was doing, eh? And who was doing the laundry? And how did they do it? Who was the cook? Probably more history is written because of cooks than because of generals.
Try to restore
a nunnery.
Yeah, the position of females in this type of business.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what you've seen yourself in the modern world, or the old world, but in modern times, of females reclaiming their expression, you know, of Buddhism. Or
it's coming, it's coming, and largely because Buddhism has moved to the West, largely because of that. It's coming because there is a global awareness and because the Western culture has more appreciation of the humanity of both sexes. And so it's coming. It's coming. But there's a long way to go, and there are some really difficult circumstances. I mean, certainly because I was a foreigner, I was allowed to do things that basically only male did when I was living in monasteries. But everybody thought I was a foreigner, so I didn't know any better. You know, but and a couple of the women started going on alms round with me because I was going on alms round, and it was okay when I was doing it alone. But then one woman who was in the monastery, because she was what the Thais call bababobo, which isn't that a lovely word? It means crazy. Bababobo. It's a great word. And so when an animal is a little weird or a human, they usually everybody convinces them or gives the animal to the monastery because the Lord Buddha's teaching will heal them. So you got this wild collection of animals. Monasteries, it's worth your life sometimes to cross the monastery after dark. You don't know which chicken, rooster, or dog is going to sink their teeth or beak into your ankle bones. I mean, it's wild. It's wild and wonderful. And then there's a few other types of humans that are, you know. So there was this really beautiful woman who was, you know, she was bababobo. But she also had a really beautiful quality to her. And I was going on alms round because I wanted to do that. And so she started going on alms round with me. And, you know, but I was a farong and she was bababobo, so okay. And then another woman started coming with us. And then I started being asked to come and see the monk who was sort of disciplinarian, and he was explaining to me that I was when I went on alms round, it was very very wonderful that I was so involved in the practices of Buddha Dharma, but I was stealing merit from the people when I went on alms round.
It's a very Asian kind of thing.
Well, it was because if a man, monk, was walking down the street and someone had alms to give and they called the monk over and gave him the alms, he would awaken in this lifetime, so they would get more merit. But if a woman is walking down the street and someone calls her over to give her alms and then she dies and she's reborn as a man who can then go on alms round and awaken, you won't get as much merit. It is certainly the view in that culture, you know. But there are great strides being made. There is now, I think it's something like 1/3 of the Congress of monks, of the government of monks in Thailand, believe that women can be fully ordained. At least 2/3. But, you know, when I was there, it was none. So that's, you know, and some very brave people, men and women, have worked very hard for that. So it's moving. It's moving. It's wonderful. Yes?
Do you know of any Thai women in the forest tradition, which are related to?
Yeah, the what's her name? She just died a while ago. Yeah, there is a whole monastery. You know, do you have email? There's a web page called Women Active in Buddhism. Do you know that web page? You're Kasai. Maybe you can talk to her and she can give you the link. It is a wonderful web page. It is a wonderful web page. It's done by a friend of mine, and it's as if it's a full-time job for her, which it isn't. But it is just, it's wonderful, isn't it? So I really recommend that you check that out. and all of the different news about what is possible for women, ordination, where all the news of that kind of things, what women teachers are available and where they are, schedules. It's quite wonderful. Histories, all that is quite a wonderful webpage. Her aim is to get to the point, to a point where there's so many women active in Buddhism that a web page isn't necessary, you see. So. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? She does such a beautiful job with that, doesn't she?
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's really, yeah. I start going in there, you know, and I just get lost. And then she phones me up and she says, I can't get through to you. I say, well, it's your fault. You shouldn't have such an interesting webpage, Julia. I just turned it on 5 hours ago. It's beautiful. The beautiful gold light in your heart. Spreads through the whole trunk of your body. This gold light is gorgeous. It's kind of warm and friendly. Goes down through your arms and legs, up through your head. Feel it tingling in your back. Pours out through your pores in all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left. Four quarters, it moves through the ceiling, it moves through walls, fills the whole of Hobart, moves through the earth, moves through the water, moves endlessly out past Jupiter. Just is unstoppable. It reaches all time and all space. And wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, it's temporarily assuaged, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great time.